I'm Manda, and together we're Black Compat. We're a growing community focused on diversity, inclusion, representation, conversation, and fun on Twitch. Wanna be fam?
For chill community vibes, Wednesday nights at 7, join BC Row for the Wednesday Wind Down.
Friday nights, join us for Let's Plays, where we explore narrative and single-player campaign games. Stop by on Fridays at 7. Catch our flagship podcast, The Tribunal, live every other Sunday at 3 p.m., where we talk about issues that are important to us as Black women.
Issues like representation, inclusion, diversity, and more within the video games and entertainment industries. Check our channel and social handles to find out when a new Tribunal is going to drop.
We've got even more content on our YouTube channel, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter handles, and our website, blackcompat.com.
So join in the conversation in whatever way you like at Black Compat. Remember, always and.
Never or.
All times are Eastern.
Mr. Frog is running for president. America needs calm and steady leadership to build a safer America. A prosperous America. A stronger America. Vote for Mr. Frog, and together we can build Mr. Frog's America.
Hello, I'm Mr. Frog and I approve this message. No, I don't. I hate you. Fuck you.
And now, the Boston Bastard Brigade, Omni Street Inc., Wicked Anime, and Black Compat proudly present Duck Amuck in Japan.
Bastards and wenches, welcome to Duck Amuck in Japan, episode 17, The Dangers in My Ugaiku. I am your King Baby Duck, Evan Borgo, coming to you from Ikebukuro, Tokyo, and joining me, as always, is the creator of Solarian Sun and the king of all cat girls, AFLM. Yeah, we'll be talking a little bit about Smiling Friends Season 2. We've also got three different exhibitions surrounding very popular anime that are currently going on, and a couple that have unfortunately ended by the time this podcast has ended. So a little bit of that rub in your face and I went to this and you can't go to this sort of a feeling. First off, I know this is such a cliche question to ask, but Andrew, how's the weather out there in Boston?
It is fine. It is fine. We've had our first full week of fairly nice weather.
Okay. Because today in Tokyo is 85 degrees.
Nice. That sounds pretty great.
Well, the good thing is the humidity isn't here yet. That summer humidity is here. So it feels nice.
Right.
It feels good. But when that humidity hits, when that happens in like July and August, you're going to be just drenched in sweat just 20 minutes after you step out the door, man.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to actually, dude, it was like that up until October last year. It was sweltering.
Okay.
Yeah. So, like, if you go out and travel this year to Tokyo or to Japan, keep that in mind because it gets hot. It is very, very, very muggy.
Nothing that I haven't been used to before, especially having been to Taiwan in the summer. It's pretty sticky over there.
Yeah.
And having lived in Florida for 5 years of my life, where I don't think it's ever been worse than that.
So
I'll be good.
Humidity's
fine with me.
Okay. Very okay. Just curious. Okay. Good. Before we start out the show, I do have a bit of a shout out to give to our good friend, Kat Blackard, the founder of Omniverse Network, and which was formerly the Nerdy Show Network. I got to hang out with her and her girlfriend, Jess, in Ikebukuro and Shibuya. Got to show them the wonders that is Komoda's coffee, that egg and pizza toast sandwich, which is just the best sandwich in the world. And I got to show them just how thriving the mall culture still is at Sunshine City. And Kat had a field day in Toys R Us because, you know, In Japan, there are stores that still exist that don't exist in America anymore. One being Terror Records, and the other being Toys R Us. And just Kat was just like going, ooh, oh. And like, we apparently are selling, so you know they have the Super Mario Legos in America.
Right.
In Japan, we've got Animal Crossing Legos now, which I don't think have hit America yet. And I was this close to convincing Kat to buying one of the Animal Crossing Lego sets for good reason. Number one, you can't get it in America. And number two, the weakness of the yen. So it was 10,000 yen for this set. But at the time of with our visit there, it was like $70 if she used like her American credit card. So, you know, good deals, good deals. But I don't think that wound up happening. And
I was just gonna say I hit up a Toys R Us while I was in Japan as well, and it was fairly underwhelming because you know it wasn't as cool as going into an anime store or anything like that. It was like going to a Toys R Us and you find like I was kind of shocked at the lack of anime stuff that they have at Toys R Us in Japan.
The one in Ikebukuro has a lot of anime stuff, so you know, we've got the stuff for kids like Doraemon and Anpanman, but they've also got stuff like Pretty Cure and Dragon Ball, Jujutsu Kaisen, so maybe maybe they've put a little bit more focus on the anime stuff. Specifically at that location, with Ikebukuro being sort of like the new anime mecca.
Mm-hmm.
And then taking her to Tower Records in Shibuya, again, just having a field day. And one of the big reasons why Kat and Jess were there was they were going to be recording an episode of their other podcast show, Mother, She Wrote. And on this upcoming episode, which you can check out very soon on MotherSheWrote.Earth, she'll be featuring two of the biggest collectors of Mother and Earthbound memorabilia. And at Tower Records, we wound up finding not just the music of the person who composed the soundtrack to Mother, but also a couple of albums that are referenced in the Earthbound and Mother games. So, like, she got to add those to her collection finally without having to spend big import bucks, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, it was really cool just to hang out with her. You know, it's kind of funny, like, how ever since I moved here, I've been seeing more and more of my friends that have only been, like, online exclusive friends, but now I get to hang out with them in person, but it just so happens to be here in Tokyo.
Right.
Yeah, so, like, with Kat and Zach from, who does a lot of PR stuff for Suda 51's games, and a few other people as well. It's just funny how, like, it took me moving halfway around the world to actually see more of my friends.
Right.
Speaking of, the other day I was going to a Japanese comedy show, and while I was buying my tickets to it, I noticed that the guy was wearing a Mother t-shirt, so I told him as best as I could that I was a fan of the game. And I also plugged the Mother, She Wrote podcast to him, even though he'll probably never listen to it because it's in English and he's Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I went to this Japanese comedy show, and it's not one of those comedy shows where it's all in English, you know, like, you'll have Japanese and English. No. All Japanese performers. And there was a Grand Prix competition with a bunch of amateur comics and duos where the winner moves on to the next round. And it was a mixture of stand-up and sketches, and they were being judged by actual professional comedians and like manzai comedy duos. And I noticed that it was being filmed, so there is a chance that it might either air on TV or on some streaming network. And I'm curious to know if it airs, because I noticed quite a few times that one of the cameras was pointed at me. And the reason why it was pointed at me is because I was the only non-Japanese person there. I went there to support a friend who was competing in the event. And with me being the only non-Japanese person there, and with me sitting in the third row, literally, and the rows are set up so it's like an arch. My seat was literally right next to the stage. So I thought I would like stick out like a sore thumb. And that, oh, there's a foreigner in here. Let's all make fun of him during this whole show.
Right.
Yeah, which, is, you know, normally that is the case with when it comes to like American or Western stand-up. There's the crowd work parts where, you know, hey, we'll talk to the audience and maybe make some jokes on their behalf and such. And I thought that, oh no, I am the only white guy here. I have just a big old target painted on me.
Literally a beacon of light.
Exactly. But I found out that very quickly that that was not the case, because Japanese comedy is very different from American comedy, where like the comedians themselves are the actual butt of their own jokes. And there was no crowd work done at all. Because I think because with them competing, a lot of these acts had to think of what they had to do right then and there, like, or not right then and there, but like beforehand, and perform without being distracted and such. Because you had your mixture of stand-up and sketches, and like you had all these sorts of people that were doing like comedy bits that kind of required a lot of preparation for. Not to say that stand-up doesn't require preparation. It requires a lot of preparation. But for something that's like a competition, you need to put extra preparation in, because like all of these competitors in here, they only had like 2 minutes to like do their bit. And there was like 10 or 12 like different performers. So like they just went biggity, 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 boom with like each person. One person goes on and then they rush off and the next person comes on. It's like, it was kind of like, it was like playing it on like super fast speed, or however you want to call it.
Interesting.
Yeah. But despite it being, you know, Japanese comedy, like there were some really funny stuff that I was able to like understand no problem. So there are a couple here that really stood out that I really wanted to talk about. One duo, so this was a manzai duo that were called Butama, or like, I don't know if you say Butama or if it's Butama. And the bit involved a boyfriend proposing to a girlfriend during a drive, and it ended with them crashing and sending the girlfriend flying and just completely destroying the props that they had on scene.
And, huh.
Yeah. Again, if this is online, I may have to send it to you, Andrew, if they post it online in any way.
Oh, yes, please. Absolutely.
The other one, the second one, was called Fruits Colmery. Fruits Colmery actually means fruits bat. And it's about this bullied boy, and he gets protected by this, like, schoolgirl. And the schoolgirl just gets like the shit beating out of her all the time. And then the boy would like pull her out of the way. And then the girl would just constantly push the boy out of the way, and just she keeps getting beat up all the time. It's a lot funnier in the bit itself. It's not so funny when you describe it. probably my favorite of the night. They were called Uchigashi. And the bit was two zombies attempting to go through a train gate. Very funny skit with a very strong punchline at the end. Those two, they didn't wind up winning the competition. They wound up winning a couple of judges' prizes, though. So I was very happy to see that. Same with Fruits Colmery and Butama. So on top of the main prize, which is moving on to the next round, there were some special judge judge prizes that Butama, Fruits Colmery, and Uchikasu. even my friend, who's part of the duo Ichiban Kawaii, they actually won a prize too. But the funny thing about the prizes is that they looked like they just bought them from the local convenience store two streets away. It's like, here's a t-shirt. Oh, here's a shower head for you. Congratulations, here's your award. But it was a very interesting experience to see a Japanese comedy show like that, because it's very different from what you expect when you go see one in America.
Sure.
Yeah. So, I may check another one out in the future, maybe, you know, again, to support my friend and such. But hopefully, the more I live here, the more I'll understand the actual Japanese aspect of the Japanese comedy. Because the person who won, I don't know why he won. Because all he did was just, like, scream really loud. And that was the bit. That was his bit.
Sheesh.
And he won.
It's like, it's like watching Dane Cook all over again. Oh, no.
No. You know what it was? So remember the episode of The Mighty Boosh? Where, like, and it's like the last episode they ever made, where Howard Moon goes on stage and performs, and it's
I don't remember.
You don't remember that. So it was like that, and he won, and it's like, I didn't really, again, language barrier, but I didn't laugh at all while watching him. Maybe that should be a new itinerary for these competitions. Make the foreigner laugh.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. Because if you make the foreigner laugh, you know it's very funny.
Though you have to, I mean, man, being grateful that they don't do the audience work and, like, pick you out. Because imagine not only them picking on you specifically for being the foreigner in the audience, but then there's also the language barrier. Mm-hmm. So they're pointing at you and making fun of you, but you're just like, dude, I'm sorry, I have no idea what you're saying.
I might have, like, hidden under my baseball cap. It's like, oh, I'm not. Oh, obake desu. I'm a ghost. Oh, I'm not really here. I don't. Yeah, I don't know how I would have reacted. Maybe I would have laughed, but, like, I would be like, all right, you're making jokes about me. You can't do anything about it. You got me. You got me. Hi. Yeah, so let's do a little bit of Ask Duck Anything ADA. Andrew, do you have any questions about my recent adventures here in Japan?
I actually don't think we... If we have, I'm sorry, but I don't know if we actually discussed this, but you just recently, as, like, within the past month or so, finished up your first Golden Week there, correct?
Yes, actually.
So how was your first Golden Week?
So my first Golden Week was pretty good. So I did a little... So one of the things I did was the Bocchi the Rock exhibition during Golden Week. So you heard about that in a previous episode. But I also took the opportunity to walk around Ueno and went to the Ueno Zoo. And actually, yes, I talked about that last week too, because I mentioned about the panda.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Remember, yes. Like the panda. I actually got to see a panda do something. So, like... So, like, I actually saw a panda walking around, looking like he was smiling and feeling happy with the crowd. One thing I didn't mention is that in Ueno, they have a Hard Rock Cafe. So I went to check out their Hard Rock Cafe. And the funny thing about this Hard Rock Cafe is, during my whole time there, you know how they play music videos and such? So yeah. They were playing music videos of, like, bands from, like, the early 2000s, but it's like that pop punk era, like that Sum 41 and Good Charlotte era sort of thing. But the majority of the bands they were playing were acts that I had no idea who they were. Like, I don't know if, like, they got popular in Japan, but were just, like, unknown in America or wherever they came from, but, like, I found it interesting because that sometimes happens. It's like a band will become big in Japan, but they won't become big in their own home country. Because I get like all these different advertisements from bands in America on my Facebook feed that are coming to Japan, and they're playing very big venues, and I'm like, who the hell are these people? So.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But I went there, I had their pulled pork sandwich. It's just as good as it was at the Boston Hard Rock Cafe. A little bit more, well, okay, maybe it's pricier in yen terms, but it's a lot cheaper when I used my American credit card. But yeah, I'm going to use that a lot. I'm trying to think what else I did. Oh, I did walk around a little bit more of Ginza as well. Just seeing all the different shops, because Ginza's kind of like the rich part of Tokyo. So like, mm-hmm. I like to go window shopping for things that I know I'm never going to afford. So like going into like the Tiffany's and the Burberry's and all those different shops and just looking at the nice stuff that I know that I will never ever touch, much less actually buy.
Yep.
But I did take advantage of a couple of Golden Week sales because at the Don Quixote, close to my apartment, they were having some really good sales. And I saw, and I don't know if this is just recently, but they started selling the protein powder that I used to buy in America. The protein powder that you recommended to me. Was it called Golden Way or Golden?
Oh, Gold Standard.
Gold Standard, yes. They actually started selling Gold Standard Whey protein powder at the Don Quixote close to my apartment. So I bought one. I bought like a 3-month supply of that for about $70. And I bought a very nice blender for like $20.
Very cool.
Yeah, so that was my Golden Week experience. I'm trying to think. Was there anything? Nah.
Because, so,
yeah.
So with so because Japan doesn't have, let's say, like Black Friday or anything. Is this when retailers and all the people who sell stuff take advantage to jump on that kind of?
I think
that's like their time to yes. jump on a big retail sale season like we do for around Christmas.
Right. Because like technically it's called Golden Week because there are three different holidays that are happening in
right.
that short amount of time.
Yeah.
But of course, gold, money, of course the shops are going to take advantage and start doing Golden Week sales. So like everybody had Golden Week sales. So like the blender that I bought was like originally like 5,000 yen, but I got it for 3,200 yen.
Wow, that's a significant price drop.
Yeah. It's a good blender. I like it. Very easy to clean up. and makes my
good awesome.
Protein. Yep, make my protein shakes like I used to. The problem is, So I like to add peanut butter to my protein shake powder and protein shakes. But the peanut butter here in Japan is so different. Like,
yeah.
It's like way too sweet. And like, way too sweet and way too creamy. So like, I'll have to go to like Caldi Coffee because Caldi Coffee sells Skippy peanut butter. And that was and that was the brand I used to buy in America. They do sell Skippy at my local grocery store too, but it's the super chunky, and I don't like the super chunky. Like, I like the good, smooth, creamy peanut butter of Skippy.
Sure. I would always recommend an organic peanut butter, but that's still, peanut butter's good anyway. But,
yeah, exactly.
But if you're putting it into a shake, like an organic peanut butter would be like, yeah, that's good. That's some good stuff.
But yeah, I think the peanut butter here is just way too creamy and way too sweet for the protein powder. So like, I will definitely try and get over to Caldi and buy myself a little bit of Skippy.
Hmm.
Yes.
Very cool.
So, We have a little bit of an update on big challenges. So, so as people know, I have sworn to become the number one fan of Big Challenges, this alligator that Sanrio created back in 1978 and never used for anything, save for a recent cameo in the Hello Kitty Island Adventure game. The podcast episode hadn't aired, but like 2 days after we had recorded the show, one of our favorite webcomic creators, Fork of Cows, decided to like make a funny thing of Sanrio characters from memory, and who does he have on top but Big Challenges. So like, I find that hilarious. Like, I bring this up, now Fork of Cows brings this up. So I say to the Fork of Cows community, because I'm part of their Facebook group, hey, they don't do anything with Big Challenges at all. Why don't enough of us try to write into Sanrio and get something to happen? Because if there's one community that actually manages to get things done, it's the Fork of Cows fan community. So we will see.
Yeah. That was a really wild thing to, because I also saw that Fork of Cows post, and I just thought it was so I almost my brain almost didn't recognize that it was Fork of Cows posting it, like almost like my brain registered like, oh, Evan must have posted this or something.
Yeah.
But the irony of us talking about it so recently and then it popping up on a random part of the internet just didn't make like a whole lot of sense to my brain, because it took me by massive surprise.
Yeah,
that was pretty funny.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. So I don't know, we'll see. I still go around to all the Sanrio shops. Like, I don't go to the same Sanrio shops, by the way, because I don't want to be a bother, but every time I see a different Sanrio shop, I will go in there. I will ask for Big Challenges, and I will just walk away disappointed every time as part of the bit to make sure that they know that there are people that want Big Challenges stuff. So.
Yeah, it's a freaking foreigner.
Yes. Yes. The freaking foreigner. Yeah. So. Why don't we dive into one of the big things that has recently aired, a show that we've been waiting to see return, and that is Smiling Friends.
I honestly didn't even think we would ever get a season two.
You didn't think so?
I really thought that after season one, that was going to be it for some reason.
Well, they did like, what was it? They did the Rio de Janeiro special where it was just them stuck in an airport the entire time.
Oh my gosh, that's right.
And then, yeah, it was like almost 2 years since we heard whether or not they were going to do more. But the thing about Smiling Friends is like, it just took over the internet, like all over the place. So I think that played a factor in why it came back. So originally, of course, they say that, oh, Smiling Friends is coming back. Season 2 premiere, April Fool's Day. Well, you know it's not going to be an actual Smiling Friends episode. But what they did was they did three episodes, or remakes of three episodes, but with puppets. And
what a great
job that was. Like, that was so fun to watch.
Yeah, It was really interesting to see how everything kind of re-kicked off. So.
Mm-hmm. And then after that, they actually showed a preview of the next episode. But there was a part of me that thought that maybe that was part of the April Fool's thing too. Like, okay, yeah, we know it's actually coming back, but the preview that they showed is from an episode that doesn't exist. And it's like, what? It's the Gwimbly episode that they showed a little preview of.
Mm-hmm.
And like, instantly Gwimbly takes over the internet, and a part of me is like, wouldn't it be funny if Smiling Friends just pulled a fast one on us and there's no Gwimbly episode, that was still part of the April Fool's episode?
It, you know, and the other thing that I'm finding really bizarre about this whole thing is the fact that people are posting clips of Smiling Friends all over YouTube of episodes that haven't aired yet. And I don't know where they're getting these clips from, because it's not being posted by official Adult Swim locations or anything. People just have clips of episodes from Smiling Friends.
Hmm. That's odd. Maybe they...
Well, that, like that, because that's how I found the episode 3 that's coming out next week. Is like a solo Alan adventure, and he's going around different shops looking for paper clips, and it was a hilarious clip. I love the clip; it's so funny. But episode 1 and 2 hadn't even aired yet, but somebody already has a clip from episode 3. So I didn't understand how that came across. Like, who had it and where did it come from? It was just bizarre to me.
Do you think it could be some sort of like guerrilla promotion sort of a thing where like maybe the creator like, of Smiling Friends like sent it to random people. It's like, hey, put this on your YouTube page.
And yeah, like a heavy quotations leak, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it's very possible.
Yeah. Well, knowing like the creators, they possibly did something like this. It's like because of their weird sense of humor and the style of their humor and the way that Smiling Friends has been promoted, I wouldn't be too surprised if they've like, quote unquote, leaked it to various different like online journalists or YouTubers in a way to help promote the show just a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I do love about this show, Smiling Friends, is, and it reminds me of why I love The Amazing World of Gumball, is like you sometimes have like all these different styles of animation all combined into one single episode. So like with Gwimbley, it's like, all right, you have the 2D characters, but then you also have the 3D character of Gwimbley who looks like he's straight out of the PlayStation era. But it's like connected so seamlessly. So like it's So like it's Alan that's spraying him with the hose.
Dirty brown water.
Dirty brown water. Yes.
I'm spraying him with dirty brown water so he will go away.
Right. But it's so seamlessly connected that it feels like it was all drawn together. Even though they're two totally different animation styles, they're just connected so seamlessly.
I also want to point out how incredibly accurate the whole PlayStation 1 look was. They actually made a low poly, low texture PlayStation 1 model, and then they also kind of devolved the audio for him as well, so the audio was a little bit crispy. It was really good. I loved it. I loved everything about it.
I did too. Like, it reminded me of like characters from old school Crash Bandicoot and Spyro.
Yeah, they were basically making a Crash Bandicoot reference the whole time, which was really funny.
Mm-hmm. And like I said, naturally, you go onto YouTube, you have people who claim to have that Gwibbly Cream Corn game, and showing a demo of the game. And it's like, these fans go so far to actually make these things real. It's wild.
I know. Fans go hard, man.
Yeah. And then there's the other episode, which is who we gotta make the president smile. And it's like, and it's a live action person. It's like,
It was so funny, dude. I could hardly handle how funny that was.
Yeah. I don't know who that guy was. Like, I was trying to find who this person that was playing the president is. Like, no information. Maybe just pulled some random guy off the street. He's like, hey, do you want to be the president for this show? Here's a tub of wings and just enjoy yourself, okay?
Oh, dude, and not only that, but they purposely put in every single line that he had on from like his first take. They did one take and that was it. And the way that he read his lines is how they did it, and it came out so funny.
Exactly.
Oh,
again, it's all so brilliant, and I absolutely love Smiling Friends. I was very late to the Smiling Friends like train because like I came down with COVID last year. and having nothing to do, I saw that Smiling Friends was on Max. It's like, all right, I'll finally watch it. And I absolutely loved it. It's one of those shows that's both disturbing and delightful at the same time.
Yeah, and the fact that they... One of the things that is really unique about the show that I've been really appreciating as far as animation goes, mm-hmm. is they animate all those really ridiculous like animation sequences on ones.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll literally have a 1-2-1-2-1-2 frame repeat of these characters doing one frame super quickly. I don't know. The comedy is just perfect. I just love the comedy that they have going on.
I've also made it a thing to keep an eye on, like the backgrounds, because sometimes I notice that they hide jokes and gags in the backgrounds. So like in the mm-hmm. first couple minutes, when you have the characters just talking and walking right before we see Gwembly being sprayed by Alet, you start seeing like there are people walking in the background. And like, okay, mm-hmm. there's a normal person walking in the background. Here comes another normal person. Then suddenly, like, this big black behemoth just, like, starts skipping in the background. I was like, what the hell was that?
Yeah, and the funny part about that is, too, is when you're paying attention to the background, you're not paying attention to what Pip and Charlie are saying. But when I did switch back to their conversation to, like, listen to what they were saying, they were talking about nonsense.
Yeah.
So it's almost like they wrote that scene for you to be distracted by what was going on in the background.
Mm, exactly. But again, like, you have to pay attention because there are some really good gags. A great one, too, is when the boss comes in at the end of episode one and he does that, you know, oogly goo, and he starts to freaking lose his mind. If you look mm-hmm. on the television, you'll see, like, the Gwembly and, like, the other characters that are on the screen are watching it happen, and they run away.
That's funny. That's pretty good.
Yeah, so... I'm glad the show's back. It's super
funny. I'm so happy it's back. It is just utterly brilliant. I love Smiling Friends so much.
Me too.
Everybody should be watching Smiling Friends.
Everybody who is age-appropriate should be watching Smiling Friends.
It's quite literally YouTubers on mainstream television.
Mm.
So yeah. It's a good watch.
Yeah, it's kind of like, well, I'm kind of hoping this happens with, do you know Tom Bates?
I think so.
So he's the creator of Nigel and Marmalade.
Nigel and Marmalade.
Yeah, not Nigel the Tiny Wizard. It's like these minute-long cartoons. You can find them like on Instagram. He sometimes posts them on Facebook and on YouTube. But they're super funny. Like, he does all the animation. He does all the music. He does all the voices. But, like, you can tell sometimes, oh, it's just him doing all these weird, funny voices. But the stories and the comedy he tells in 1 minute is, like, funnier than most shows that go on for 22 minutes long.
Sure.
So I'm hoping the same thing happens for him. He had mentioned that he is going to be doing longer cartoons. So hopefully that's a sign that maybe he might have gotten a TV deal because of the popularity of Nigel and Marmalade.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Moving on to more cartoons. So... One of the great advantages of living in Japan is checking out anime exhibitions. Just exhibitions surrounding a specific anime. So last time I talked about Bocchi the Rock. This week I talk about three different anime exhibitions that were happening. Two that are no longer going on as of this recording, and one that is still happening.
Yeah, what a bizarrely unique cultural thing that they would have art exhibitions for one specific show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is honestly something that isn't only in Japan kind of a thing, for sure.
And one of the things that they also do, and I talked about this during Bocchi the Rock, is like a lot of times they will painstakingly recreate certain areas and scenes and even like objects from the show. So it makes it feel like oh, you're actually walking into the world of these characters.
Mm-hmm.
And like, they put so much effort into it. It like makes you wonder, like, what do you do with all this stuff after you're done? Like, you can't just put it in the dumpster. Like, you...
Yeah, somebody has it.
Like, they've got to make, like... I know they have an anime museum, but they've got to, like, build some sort of warehouse just to put all this stuff in for people to check out.
Mm-hmm.
So, the first exhibition I got to check out at Sunshine City was for Frieren Beyond Journey's End. So this area, it didn't have any like settings that they were recreating, but they had some scenes that they were recreating. So like they had Himmel's statue that Frieren and Stonk and Stark. Frieren, Fern, and Stark had to clean off in one episode. You have the bit where Himmel's giving Frieren the ring, which Frieren didn't realize back then was a wedding proposal.
Mm-hmm.
And they even were recreating some of the Fern and Stark will they, won't they romantic parts, which hilariously gets mentioned in the anime itself by one of the characters just going like, just kiss already! And of course, they had the mimic, which people could take their picture of being inside, but that line was like, that line alone was almost 2 hours just to do that. So it was like,
Oh, I bet.
So I just took a picture of it and just walked off. For this one, there was mostly like, info dump displays. There were some cool quiz areas that test the knowledge of the fans. And it was nice. It was a really cool, very cool experience. And it was super popular because when I went, it was the last weekend of the exhibition. And like the line was super long, but they did such a good job with getting everybody in very quickly. Like, I thought I was going to be there for almost 2 hours, but I was out of there. I was in and out of this whole exhibition within an hour.
Right.
So it was a good time. Good exhibition. Didn't buy any merch, but...
Yeah. I definitely would have loved that one. I absolutely love Frieren. I really do.
So then after that, I went downstairs, and they had a Sergeant Frog exhibition.
Yeah.
So I found it funny. So, like, Frieren had a very, very long line. There was nobody at the Sergeant Frog line. And I feel like that's kind of like part of the joke of Sergeant Frog is like, oh, there was the episode where they made like their own cartoon or like they tried to like do their own concert and nobody showed up. So like seeing Sergeant Frog exhibition and being like almost nobody there is like, this is very Sergeant Frog.
Mm.
So at this one, they did recreate a lot of the scenes from Sergeant Frog. So you had like the living room with the vacuum cleaner that Kiriro uses, but like everything's still a complete mess because Kiriro, of course, is reading his manga or building Gundams. They had Kiriro's room, which had the Gundam models and his beach chair. You had the rooms of Natsumi and Fuyuki. And what was cool, Fuyuki, is they recreated the very first episode where you see Kiriro peeking from behind the wall, from behind his like little camouflage thing that he had.
Mm-hmm.
They had Kululu's lab with some of the wacky inventions that were on display. Giro's tent with Sweet Potato cooking in a fire and his guns and arsenal inside of the tent. Let's see. Momoka's dining room they had with a happy Tamama surrounded by all the sweets and food that he loves. Dororo and Koyoki's dojo, and the one that really surprised me, because I don't ever remember seeing it in the anime, but that's because I haven't watched all of it, because there's still like well over 100 more episodes I still need to watch of it. Mm-hmm. But they had Mutsumi, who has Kululu, they had his radio station. So it was neat to see all these sorts of recreations, and it made me remember like all the episodes we had watched of like the dub, and like some of the episodes I've watched subtitled, because you could watch the whole thing on Crunchyroll. Unfortunately, you can't get the phenomenal English dub that they created for that show, but it's still very funny. Like, the Japanese version is still very funny.
Mm.
And they did this exhibition because this year marks the 20th anniversary of the Sergeant Frog anime. And they have announced that they are making a new Sergeant Frog show. So
I am
so stoked for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm hoping, because with them doing the, with Crunchyroll doing English dubs, it'd be great if they picked it up and they got the whole cast to come back and do the show, because that would make things very special. Okay, so the last thing I got to check out was for The Dangers in My Heart, but specifically, this was an exhibition celebrating the author, Norio Sakurai, her 20th anniversary as a professional manga artist. So on top of The Dangers in My Heart, they were also showcasing her past three works, which were Kodomo Gakkyou, Mitsudomoe, and Rororo. And out of the three, Mitsudomoe is the only one that also got an anime made. It has two seasons. Originally, you could watch it on Crunchyroll, but unfortunately, you can't watch it anymore on there. So like, there's no way to watch Mitsudomoe in the West legally. But I found something interesting about the anime, and it's the fact of who wrote and directed the show. So the director is Masahiko Ota, and the writer of the Mitsudomoe adaptation was Takashi Aoshima. Now, those names might not mean much, but those two have worked together on such shows as Yuru Yuri, Kotoro-san, Love Lab, Himoto Umaru-chan, Gabriel Dropout, Uzumaid, Didn't I Say to Make My Abilities Average in My Next Life, and on Onipan. And they're also working together on this summer's My Dear Friend Nokotan. And if you've not seen the trailer for My Dear Friend Nokotan, oh boy, it's batshit crazy, and I'm looking forward to it.
Is that the one with the deer?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. Yes. Yeah, yes. That one looks great.
Yeah, so they had the first three areas specifically focused on those three earlier mangas. So you had, what did I say? Kodomo Gakkyou, Mitsudomoe, and Rororo. And they were displaying the original panels, the sketches from the series, and you saw how it went from being like very rough drafts to like the final product for it to be like printed into the comics.
Mm-hmm.
So like with the Fist of the North Star I went to, like you could see like where parts are whited out because they made a mistake in a little era that you would not see in the final copy. But then the main area, of course, was for The Dangers in My Heart, which was huge. They had all these storyboards, rough sketches from the manga, a plethora of promotional drawings and manga cover art that Sakurai prepared for the series. And just like in the Sergeant Frog exhibition, they had recreations from the anime. So they had the nurse's office where Kyotaro hid under the bed, and that was like where he realized his feelings for Anna in episode 3. They had the classroom that Kyotaro and Anna had their classes in, but they also had them hiding underneath the teacher's podium like they did in episode 22. They had the library with a one-to-one scale model of Anna sitting at the table. I sent you a picture of me on the other side of the table sitting with Anna.
Yes, I've seen that. And the weird part about having a model like that, and this was kind of the point that you made about the last one too, is who gets to keep this stuff after the exhibitions are gone?
Yeah.
You know, somebody gets to keep this. There's no way they just throw the stuff in a warehouse and just store it away, right?
Exactly. So, because like, You know what kind of remind me of? Because it was kind of set up the very same way as the model they made of Takagi-san a couple of years ago. Because the same studio that did The Dangers in My Heart also did Teasing Master Takagi-san. And I wonder if like they kind of like just... Well, it's no, it's not the same model, but like they did the same positioning and everything. Like they used that as the rough outline for how the Anna statue should look and be positioned. But I don't know. I know there are sometimes these statues will actually go to the animation studios. So if you visit, if you visit the Silver Link Studio, they have a one-to-one scale model of Renge from Non Non Biori, with her arms out holding her recorder. So I think that must have been part of some sort of exhibition that was similar to this.
Yeah, you know what? You're probably right.
I would say maybe like the animation studios, or if they have room, maybe they have like the manga creator has it at her house or something like that.
Man, I mean, if they had a Solarian Sun exhibition and somebody made a one-to-one model of one of my characters, I'd be like, yo, I'm taking that, by the way.
Yeah.
It's like, I'd be in my contract. It'd be like, if you're doing an exhibition and you're doing a model, I'm taking the model.
We'll start working on a story bible for an anime adaptation, and maybe, just maybe, you will get that exhibition.
That's right.
But that was like the not the only Anna model there. So they had also a Wonder Scale model of Anna wearing the fox mask from the season 2 finale, which took place at the Fushimi Inari Taisha Shrine in Kyoto, an episode that aired while I was in Kyoto and staying very closely to that shrine. So that was like a really cool experience of like going to there, going to this specific, like, famous area of Kyoto, and then watching an anime episode that takes place at that very spot.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was a cool exhibition. That is still being held. I think it's going to be held until mid-June at the Animate in Ikebukuro. Highly recommend checking it out. It's such a cool exhibition. When I was there, I did wind up buying an exclusive plush that they had there of Anna Yamada, who's wearing one of Kyotaro's like death metal hoodies that he wears from time to time. So, yeah, check that out. If you're visiting Tokyo sometime in the next couple of weeks or so, I urge you, if you love The Dangers in My Heart, check this exhibition out. Get there early to buy your tickets early, because that's what I did. So I like bought, I got there at like 10 in the morning and bought my tickets, and it was timed for like 4 hours later. I was like, perfect. I could check out the other two exhibitions while I wait. So yeah, like a triple threat of anime exhibitions all in one day. 10 out of 10, recommend. All right. So, Andrew, you actually gave me a little bit of homework last episode, because we talked about first impressions of anime from spring 2024, and you had mentioned one show, and I started talking about a certain show that I decided to drop, and I said, well, I need something to maybe replace it, and you told me, out of all the shows, you told me to check out Chillin' in Another World with level 2 super cheat powers.
Yep.
So, tell me, what drew you into the show originally?
Dark skinned muscle girl in the preview. It may sound shallow, but it's true. I was like, what is that show? And then I started watching it, and I also realized that there was a cute fox girl in it too, or wolf girl, or whatever she is. Yes. I don't know what she is.
She's a wolf girl. So it's like, so think about that. This season, we get two wolf waifus. We've got, so what's the name of this wolf girl again? Oh my God.
Oh goodness.
I thought I have it somewhere. Reese is her name.
Mm, mm-hmm.
So Reese. So you have Reese from this show, and then you have Holo coming back from Spice and Wolf. So you've got two Wolf Girl waifus this season. And one of the things that, like, so I watched the first, so I've marathoned through all the episodes, but, like, episode two threw me off so much because, like, it didn't start with a continuation of what happened in episode one. It just started right off with the opening theme song. And it's not an opening theme that I would have expected. Because, like, it's this cutesy, lovey-dovey song by a character who technically hadn't been introduced yet. So, like, you're watching Reese performing and singing this song, and I'm, like, watching, it's like, who the hell is this girl that's singing to Flyo? Is it Flyo or Philo that his name is?
Philo.
To Philo. I'm like, who is this? And then episode two starts, and then you see that, oh, she trans the big wolf girl that starts attacking him in episode one. That's her. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, this is a good recommendation, Andrew. So, like,
it's odd because it's mostly made out to be an isekai action adventure, but it's really not. It's really an isekai slice of life with some action elements that pop up every once in a while, because the action elements of it are kind of lampooned.
Yes.
In the way that the hero, quote unquote hero, that they summon is actually just a big windbag and totally a douche and he's a jerk and... I mean, that was a very redundant statement, but
yes, like I made the meme of it where he is just Titan from Megamind.
Yes, yeah. So you know, you then you just kind of, he's kind of like the B story of it, right? And then there's the A story, which is that just them being like, I don't want to be involved in this. I'm not even from this world, so I'm just gonna go off and live a new life in this world, right?
Yes.
So and then in the midst of that is when Risei falls in love with Philo because Philo doesn't want to kill her and says, like, oh, well, you're a monster, but, you know, I've defeated you. And then she's just like, oh, I'm going to marry you. And he's just like, oh, well, there's this other party that are trying to also hunt monsters, but they're my friends now. And I'm just going to pretend to be married to Philo or to Risei, and Philo's. Or Risei is just like, yeah, we're really married now. It's such a bizarre story. It's kind of refreshing in the sense that it's not just another isekai anime where it's like, oh, it's superpowers and I'm the best and whatever. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with liking that guy, because I like those kinds of shows too, but there's just something refreshing about having a show that I can turn my brain off to because one of the girls is really cute.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And in that sense, it's funny, because then you have the whole subplot that only happened in one episode where, you know, there's the blonde girl from his friends group who's there, and the big bad evil guy, Dark Lord, has the biggest crush on her. And
yeah, Gozal.
Yeah, and just doesn't... Because she's terrified of him, and everybody around her is just like, dude, that guy has it really bad for you. And she's just like, I don't care. He's terrifying. You know, I don't know. It's something so stupid and something so funny and charming about it, you know?
Well, I made the note of, like... So the woman that you're talking about, Bali Rosa. So it's so her, and there's the mage there, Bellano. They're almost like Bizarro Darkness and Megumin from Konosuba, where Bellano faints after 1 week spell instead of explosion magic.
Yeah.
And Bali Rosa absolutely. Is strong, but instead of being horny, she's just stupid.
And afraid of everything.
And afraid of everything.
And the other part that I thought was kind of weird about the dynamic is Bella Rosa also has a crush on Philo, and Risei is very aware of it. Mm-hmm. And basically anybody who shows any kind of affection towards Filoche, then she gets really defensive about it, which is, you know, kind of cute, whatever.
Yeah.
It's funny. So there's, I don't know, yeah, there's just a whole bunch of aspects of the show that it has going for it more than it has against it, and for some reason it's one of my go-to shows from the season. Whenever there's a new episode of it, I'm like, oh, I guess I'm watching that today.
Yeah.
You know?
I actually start my mornings off with it. So, like, every day when a new episode pops up, so, like, every week, I turn on my TV, have breakfast, and I watch Chilling in Another World with level 2 super cheat powers.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a good way to start the morning. I did love the fact, going back to, like, the whole thing between Gozo and Ballerosa, I love the fact that she puts up such a tough act at him, not realizing that he is the Dark One at first. But then...
Yeah, sure.
But then when she realizes it, like, her eyes just roll up in her head and just completely conks her out completely, because she realizes, oh, I could have died there!
Mm-hmm.
I also want to point out too, so the wolf girl, Rise, is played by one of my favorite voice actresses. Her name is Rie Kugimiya. And the thing about Rie Kugimiya is that she plays mostly tsundere roles. So like she's like Zero in The Familiar of Zero. She plays Sanzen Nagi in Hayate, the combat butler. Like her go-to are like those tsundere characters. So it's kind of nice hearing her play a character that isn't like, I don't like you, but maybe I do like you, but I'm gonna pretend I don't like you, even though I really do like you, like mm-hmm. she normally does. So it's good to hear her extending her range a little bit more compared to what she normally does.
Right.
But yeah, this show's great. I love it. And I have you to thank for recommending it to me, because I had to stop watching Vampire Dormitory. That show was just awful. Like, I was not joking when I said that while I was recording the last episode, I was deleting it from my queue. I did that while we were recording. So, like, don't watch that show. Watch Chillin' in Another World with level 2 super cheap powers. Surprisingly good show of the season. There are a couple other things that I have watched, but you're going to have to wait until, you're going to have to wait a couple of days after this episode airs to read my thoughts on it, because I got sent a certain movie about certain volleyball boys, and I can't say anything else other than that. You got to wait.
What could it possibly be?
Yeah. So, yeah. So, all right. Wow. Very short episode today.
Well, yeah. We kind of covered a lot of stuff last episode. I mean, we were talking for like 2-3 hours last episode. So, yes. So we kind of had our work cut out for us for this one.
Yeah. Okay. I guess that's true. So maybe we should take. You know, it's good to have a short episode from time to time, especially for you listeners, because sometimes it's tough to listen to a full-on 2-hour podcast episode from time to time. So why don't we end things off here, maybe save some other things, and well, maybe hopefully some new things will happen that we will talk about in the future. Actually, no, wait. I do have one other thing I want to mention. So I get to check off another band off of my, like, bucket list of groups that I get to see. Two bands, actually. Uh-oh. So, Tokyo Ska Paradise Orchestra are playing a show at Diver City in Tokyo. It's going to be for their 35th anniversary. And opening for them is the group Ali, Alien Liberty Independence. I think that's what it stands for. And if you don't know them, they did the first opening theme to Beastars, and they did Lost in Paradise from Jujutsu Kaisen. So, yeah, dude, like, double dose of ska and big band music, it's gonna be great.
Yeah, that sounds like a pretty good time. You'll have, man, dude, I can't believe how many concerts you're seeing, honestly.
Dude, like, the list of bands that I want to see here in Japan is in the thousands. You got to realize that. I've been listening to Japanese music for 21 years now. And during these 21 years, I've listened to maybe a couple of thousand Japanese bands that I would love to see live in concert. So you better believe that all of my extra money is going to concerts.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's really a perfect fit for you. I don't know why you wouldn't.
Exactly. All right. Now we can finish off this episode. So, Andrew, please plug away.
Sure. Well, if you guys want to check out what I have going on, you can always go to solariansun.com, where you can read my comic for free, totally free. New weekly updates. I just updated up to page 300. So there are 300 pages sitting on my website for free that you can totally read at your own discretion and catch up with the story. However, I will be on the road for my convention circuit this year, starting in June. June 14th, I will be at Fan Expo Boston selling the books. So if you want to kind of catch up and become a fan before I hit the road and then go to all my conventions this year, you can go do that. Plus, you can also sign up at patreon.com/AFLM. I have a free membership going on there, but also there's the paid subscription where you can now read up to chapter 25 of the book, which is halfway through the story, because there's I have a projected 50 chapter rate going on. So which means we are halfway through Solarian Sun and you can join that adventure. That's up to 728 pages. That's crazy. So you can go ahead and do that. That's patreon.com/AFLM if you want to become a member. And there's free memberships as well. And I believe that is everything. So next big show is Fan Expo Boston, June 14th to the 16th at the Heinz Convention Center.
Very cool. And as always, b3crew.com for recent news, reviews, and podcast episodes. Follow me on KingBabyDuckESH on Twitter and on, let's see, Instagram. Yeah, those are the only two right now because I deleted a couple of my apps because I realized that I was posting to bots and, like, that's just a waste of time. So, yeah, got some cool things coming up very soon. So, yeah, tune in to hear more about it in the future. So, until next time, this is your King Baby Duck.
AFLM.
Reminding you that if you're going to chase your dreams,
Make sure you run the buck.
Almost.
Yes. We're getting there.
Yes. K-bye.
K-bye.